Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanti Nilayam. Till a few moments ago, you were listening to this morning's Vedam and Bhajans directly from the Sai Kulwant Hall. It is 9:49 a.m. on Thursday morning, August 7, 2014, and you're tuned to Radio Sai's Asia Stream, your one-stop shop for a live connection to Prashanti Nilayam all day long, every Thursday, through our program Thursday Live. Dear brothers and sisters, let me begin by apologizing for signing in about 9 minutes too late this morning. We were experiencing some technical difficulties which have now been sorted out with Bhagwan's divine grace. Meanwhile, in the Sai Kulwant Hall this morning, Mangal Aarti has just concluded as we speak and devotees are quietly lined up for the darshan of the holiest of shrines on the face of planet Earth. The ashram atmosphere is still reverberating with the sacred energy of the powerful Vedam and the melodious bhajans sung by Bhagwan's beloved students. Today is a beautiful day here in Prashanti Nilayam with comfortable temperatures and an overcast sky. Right now it is about 26 degrees Celsius outside the Radio Sai studios and we are expecting daytime highs of 32 degrees Celsius and overnight lows in the low 20s. As usual, Prashanti Nilayam is hosting a very diverse population of devotees right now. The Sevadal volunteers from the Indian capital of New Delhi are serving the ashram and its allied institutions right now. And there is a visibly large number of Western devotees here these days. Many of them, I believe, are part of a group from Zone 7 of the International Sai Organization. And just FYI, Zone 7 comprises most of the Northern European countries, including Austria, Czechoslovakia, Germany, Hungary, Belgium, Denmark, Greenland, Iceland, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Estonia, Finland, Latvia, Lithuania, and Poland. Wow, what a list of beautiful countries. And the beautiful devotees from these beautiful places are quite a sight to behold, especially the ladies in their matching saris going about their spiritual sadhana in such a disciplined and calm manner. Yesterday I noticed when I went for my lunch there that many of them were serving the meals in the Western canteen with so much of love and graciousness. Where else, except in Prashanti Nilayam, dear listeners, can you find such diversity of the human race united by their singular love for Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba? Now, here's what you can expect today on Morning Glory. We will continue with our Tryst with Divinity exclusive interview with Mrs. Haima Reddy of the United States. Last week, you heard part one of this conversation. Today, you can catch part two right here. And later on the show, we'll continue playing our very well-received Fleeting Moments interview with Brother Vijay Sai of Bangalore. But first, let's continue the Tryst with Divinity interview with Dr. Haima Reddy from where we left off last Thursday. As I announced last week, Dr. Haima Reddy is a practicing pediatrician and a long-standing devotee of Baba. She is a person of high achievement and balance in her personal and professional life, and in this interview she shares glimpses of the divine grace that has come her way in abundance. And while listening to it, if you feel the need to get caught up with part one, that is in case you have missed it last week, worry not. At the end of today's interview, I will tell you how to access it. For now, I'm very pleased to play for you part two of my Tryst with Divinity interview with Dr. Haima Reddy of America, and here it is for your listening pleasure.
And then those days, you know, Swami was coming at least 2 to 3 times in the morning for darshan and same time in the evening, either before the regular darshan before bhajans, but during bhajans and even after bhajans. And these girls, they would not move anywhere. They, once they come, they would stay there. And when everyone leaves for breakfast and they will move, they can take the front seat because, you know, at that time there are no more chits, so you can move forward. So they used to have a good seat, and then and especially, you know, those days there was no restriction, so they used to carry all these books to read. And one day Swami came, and then, you know, he used to interact with them, and he used to say, Dunapotu, that was the word he used to use a lot. Dunapotu means a Heba fellow. And he said, what are you reading? And then he'll look at their science book, and it's a big books like that. So, one time there was something interesting happened. And my youngest daughter, you know, she's always very happy to, I mean, she used to write letters and then give it to Swami whenever, you know, possible he used to take it. And even my in-laws used to ask, what do you write every day? What is there for you to write every day? But almost she would write every day, and then whenever Swami accepts it, she is very happy. And then one day she wrote a letter and gave it to Swami, and then Swami accepted it that day. And then as soon as Darshan, she came home, and she was all bubbly and very happy, and she told her sister and my in-laws, come on, tomorrow morning all of you get up early and get ready, because Swami took my letter, and in that letter I wrote, if you accept this letter today, you're calling us for interview tomorrow.
Wow.
So he's going to call us for interview.
How old was she then?
She was about 14.
Mm-hmm.
Around 14. And she said that he's going to, so wear your best clothes and then be ready. And we all had to go to darshan early. And then the elder sister says, oh, come on, what are you saying, you know? How are you sure that he's going to call? He said, I know, because he took my letter, so he's going to call. And so they all went for darshan. And believe it or not, Swami called them for interview that day. So, and you can imagine the joy and the, you know, bliss.
And the faith she would have developed.
Yeah.
It would have confirmed her faith.
Yes, that was a very big incident for her. And then Swami did call them for interview. And then he spoke to them. And that's the time that he looked at the books. And he says, oh, what is this physics? They were reading the physiology. So he was looking at all the science books and everything. So was wonderful for them, for her simple faith, and then that Swami's confirmation that Swami called.
Yeah.
And after that, and then another interview, Swami, you know, with the girls, we were all together. So Kiran, my eldest daughter, she asked Swami, how come you know everything, because you're all knowing, but you ask us, you know, when did you come, when are you going, so you know that. And then Swami smiled and then told her, no. So Bangaru, he said, that's the difference between God and the man. God knows everything, but he pretends he knows nothing, whereas man knows nothing, and he acts as if he knows everything. So, and then he, you know, he took his white handkerchief from his chair, and he held it in his hand, and he showed just a little bit of it, piece of it, and he asked us, what is it? And we all said, Swami, white cloth. And then he opened it up and spread it, and now what is it? And we said, it's a white handkerchief. See, that's the difference, that other little knowledge is the limited, whereas this is the total awareness. So God knows everything. And so that was the teaching for my oldest daughter. And then he asked her, because at that time she was like, they're 2 years apart. So she was like 16, my youngest daughter was 14. And he asked, who is your friend? And she didn't understand, and she kept quiet. Again, Swami asked, who is your friend? So then she got the message, and then she said, Swami, you are my friend. And Swami was very pleased, and then he told them, see, God is the best friend. He told them, God is your best friend. And these so-called friends in your school, you know, they are just only when you have money in your pocket, they all come around you. Like he gave the example, like in a pond, if there is water, all the frogs stay, and then when there is no water, and then all the frogs disappear. Just like that, the friends, if you don't have any money or popularity, everybody disappears. So God is your best friend. And that really made a very strong impact on both of their minds. And another interview, since we are at the talking about the girls, I just want to mention another
Please.
Time. Yeah, in another interview, Harini, by now this is after a few years when she was ready to go to the college, because and since she was going to East Coast, and she asked Swami, give me advice because I'm moving away from my parents, because from Los Angeles to Boston, it's a long distance, 3,000 miles away. So I want advice from you. Then Swami said, first thing, he gave her reassurance that I'm always with you. I will be always with you. And then he gave the teaching that listen first, don't look at the boys. He said, first it starts by looks, and then you smile, and then it leads to conversation, and then it leads to relationship, friendship. And then it leads to relationship.
He had it all dissected.
All dissected. So
step by step.
The looks first, and then smile, then conversation, then friendship, and then relationship. So stop at the looks itself. So he said, stay away from the boys, basically, you know, at that age. So that was a very good, profound lesson for her. And also whenever she traveled, because Swami said, how he always says that, meintane, kantane, jantane, ventane, untanu, because I'm always with you, around you, above you, below you, and behind you. So truly, she felt it whenever she was traveling. She always felt his presence, and most of the time she said there was always an empty seat next to her, and she felt that Swami was sitting next to her. So that was her experience of going to college outside, away from the home.
And both your daughters did very well academically. They both are very successful medical doctors, and they went to Ivy League schools.
Yeah. And since you asked in at the beginning, we were discussing, because they were coming every summer, like you mentioned, all my friends started asking me, how come you send the girls every summer?
They will lack social skills, they will lack extracurricular. There's such an obsession with that with some parents. So,
and he said that, you're brainwashing them and sending them every summer, and they don't have this summer fun like swimming and going playing and all that stuff. Like
and partying, and later those parents will be dealing with the consequences of those choices.
Yes. And then I told them, I just smiled, and I used to think in my head, they're not being brainwashed, they're getting brainstormed from Swami, with all the lessons and everything. So it's they're happy there.
But didn't the girls miss the fun?
No, they not, because they had more holy fun here. Yeah. They felt that they had more fun here because, with my in-laws, they had good food in the house, all those good Indian dishes they had, and then with the Swami's interaction, and then free time, they had time to read for the next year courses. For some reason, and also we were coming and spending some time here, and so they never felt bad, and they, in fact, sometimes I used to tell them, hey, come back 1 week before school starts. Nope. They would just come just a day or 2 days before the school starts, so that they didn't want to even miss any time during the summer vacation.
Now when they look back, they must be so even happier with their choice.
Yeah, and now I really feel that they are enjoying the fruits of all that stay, because now that gave them so much inner strength and to bring up their own children now. So it's really helped, it's had a strong foundation, and in my opinion, it's really helped, and I have no regrets, and I really feel that it's their good fortune that they were able to come and spend it, because otherwise, if my in-laws were not here, it would not have been possible.
Now, Dr. Reddy, you're quite a multitasking person yourself. You play so many roles, and very interestingly, you bridge that gap between modern and traditional. You're a dutiful daughter-in-law, a wife, a mom, a grandmother, and you're a very successful professional doctor. How has Swami influenced you in defining your priorities in life and striking a fine balance between domesticity, your personal responsibility, and your professional duties, and finding yourself in all these various roles?
I think this is also because, like I told you, Swami is guided me like my mother in all my roles as a daughter, next as a wife, then as a daughter-in-law, and then as a mother of two daughters, and then a grandmother, and also as a in my professional career as a pediatrician. So I can see His divine hand helping me all through my life. So in all aspects of my life, He was guiding me and then helping me. And one time, when we were in the USA, and there you know how we have to do, like you mentioned, everything we have to do for ourselves. And then since I had two jobs, I had to work at home and then again work outside. So when in the evenings, when I come home from working in my office, mm-hmm. when I come, and then I used to see my husband that he can go into the puja room and do his meditation and do his evening prayers. Because we were all doing in the morning before the girls, that's one thing we all did in the morning before we went to work. We all got up and then we did our morning prayers and then we went to work. But in the evening when I came back, I didn't have chance to sit in the prayer room. So I used to feel bad that I'm missing something because I had to get busy with my kitchen duty and I had to prepare dinner and serve the children and then help them their homework if needed. And then by the time I'm tired, and then I used to go to bed. So when the next time when I came to Puttaparthi and when I had a chance in the interview room, I asked Swami, I feel that I don't have much time and I come home from work in the evening, my husband can do prayers, and I almost like a complaint, and I don't have time to do it. And then Swami looked at me smiling, and he said, Bangaru, and he said, the duty is God, work is worship. And he said, if what you are doing in the kitchen is also worship. And he told me that when you are cutting the vegetables, you feel as if you are cutting your desires or cutting your ego. So be happy when you are doing that job. And then when you are making chapati or rotis and you are rolling, so imagine that you are expanding your love because you are spreading your love. So that's the meaning, he said. And then when I'm cleaning the floor or vacuuming or sweeping the floor, and imagine that you are cleaning all the six inner enemies from your heart. You are purifying your heart. So with that lesson Swami made, as if the kitchen is like a workshop, and then he told me, that what all I'm doing in the kitchen is also worship. So, and then he told, if you have that kind of feeling, then work becomes worship. And otherwise, if you separate that this is the kitchen work and the only sitting in the prayer is a spirituality and this is secular and spirituality, as long as I separate, I won't have any peace of mind. So he told me, so once you separate, you will never have peace of mind. There is only one work exists, he said. There is only one type of work, and that is God's work.
Whether it's in the kitchen or in your practice,
anywhere,
or in your puja room.
Yeah, and he said in Telugu, unnadi okkate karma, that is Bhagavat karma. That means only God's work. There's only one work exists, and that's God's work. And so that was a big lesson for me. And from that time onwards, and since Swami said, duty is God, whatever work duty I'm doing, it's God's work. And like Swami is saying, when you do duty with love, it's when you do correction. So when you have to do duty without love, is deplorable. Duty with love is desirable, and then love without duty is divine. So similarly, same teaching he told in a different way. So with that attitude, then I didn't feel that I'm working too much either at home or in my office, so it became very easy. And then he also told in another interview, change of work is rest. So if I work in my office and I come home and do my the housework, that's change of work. So that's rest.
Go on your couch with the remote control.
So that's exactly like he told even the boys in one of the discourses he gave in the college. He told the boys, when you go to when you come home from the school, come to the hostel from the school, and then you just go and play, do in the you play for a while. That's change change of work. So you get rest, and then you go and do your prayers or sing bhajans. That's different work, and then you go back to your homework.
He's so really like redefined that, downtime. The Western concept of downtime is very different. Yes. Swami has just redefined it.
Yeah, he says change of work is rest. So these are the two teachings that really help me to balance my work, and this is what I share every time I go. If people ask me, you know, what's the most important teaching from Swami for you, so I tell them this is what the duty is God and work is worship, and change of work is rest. So with that attitude, then you don't complain, and then you don't say that I'm overworking and then I have no time to do this, and all these complaints.
But don't you get tired? Don't you feel a need to replenish your energy levels?
No, I think the Swami, when the body is, if it needs rest, automatically, of course, you do get sleep, and then, you don't waste time in other things, but this is what, God provides what I can handle. So then I do get enough sleep, in between, of course, yeah. So the body needs the rest.
I see. Dr. Reddy, knowing what you know today, as a Sai devotee and someone who has walked the talk, as you just described, what advice would you give younger Sai women about making choices in life and striking a balance and just being themselves? Because sometimes our values may be in conflict with social expectations.
So they have to balance between, the younger generation, they have to balance between their career and their personal life.
Absolutely.
Because now, there is so much, focus on the building of the career, and then when they finally settle down and then they want to have a family, they want to get married, or they want to have children, already, they have passed that, the age period. And now they want to get married, and it's so difficult, at that age. And then Swami, in one interview, he told us that if you, it's your choice. If you don't want to get married, it's fine. There are a lot of people who are very happy. But if you have the desire, then do it when it's the right time. So,
and did he say when was the right time?
For the girls, he said before 25, for the girls,
really?
To get
that's
married.
Pretty young,
yeah,
for a lot of people.
Yeah, for girls and the boys, a little bit between 25 to 30. Then after marriage, my first daughter, she was still doing her training, so she didn't have children. And Swami told, if you want to have children, have it now. Don't wait too long. If you wait too long, it's not good. And now I'm seeing this as a pediatrician, I can tell, because in America and in Japan, and then most of the ladies, they're waiting till they're 40 to get married and to have children later on. So they're having so many problems to have children, and also, so many other...
And the
other
risk factor increases when you have when you enter motherhood for the first time much later in life.
Yes.
The chances of birth defects increase.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So,
spina bifida, everything.
Yeah, so that's another thing I would say.
Swami, he made it seem so simple, but he had factored everything in.
And he really told my daughter, to one of them, he said, if you want to have children, have it. Otherwise, you don't have to. It's all your choice, because Swami doesn't force anything, because he told it the choice. But that brings for me to share my daughter's wedding. And then when she was only like... 12 or 13, my daughter, then Swami said, oh, I'll do your wedding, and I'll do it with a military band.
Oh, wow.
So he told her. And then, how Swami, when they become teenagers, six, every time in the interview room, that's all he took us. So when are you getting married? And when is their marriage? Teasing. Did you find the boys? And then we used to tell them, Swami, you know who it is, so why don't you tell us, Then he said, no, you do your job, and then I'll select who is good, like that. So finally, when we found a boy for my older daughter, and then the only request she said that to the boy was that I want to get married in India. So at that time, he didn't think anything. He said, okay. So, and then after he told okay, then he thought about it. Your parents live here, and his parents also live in Florida, so in the United States. Why are you getting married in India? So he had no clue. And then, because he is not exposed to Swami at all. So then when they came to Whiteville, so on June 8th, this was 1995, it was such a memorable event in our life, for our whole family. So that's why we remember. The wedding was on June 8th, 1995. And then Swami, you know, he made all the arrangements, and then he told us, when do you want us to come, Swami? He said, 3 days before the wedding. My husband and myself, we arrived 3 days before the wedding, and but my daughter was there about a month before, because she finished her medical school by then, and she had 6 weeks vacation, so she came a month before her wedding. And every time he will see her after darshan, and he'll tease her, say, hey, what do you want for your menu? And then, you know, they learn smart not to say anything with the Swami when he asks a question, just to be quiet, and then the things happen better. So she used to be quiet, and then one day even said, come on, you have to tell what is the menu. And my mother-in-law and my daughter, they kept quiet, and then Swami made the big menu and everything.
You had the best event planner, wedding planner in the world.
I mean, that was the most memorable thing. I mean, he did everything. He arranged for everything, flowers, everything, the food and servers, everything was done by Swami. And then we came 3 days before the wedding, and then
and when did the groom-to-be come?
He also came 3 days before, and he gave, and that's another story.
It must have been quite a cultural shock for him.
Yeah, for him, and the Swami gave the guest house for them. Mm-hmm. And then he told all the Sevadals, you know, treat them nicely. They were treated, I mean, they got the best treatment, royal treatment, you know, with all the food and everything. So, and then just before the wedding, one day before wedding, Swami invited for an interview, and then my son-in-law goes, and so he stretches his hand, so almost wants to shake hands. And then, you know, and we were all, you know, biting our tongues, you know, what to do. And then, yeah, Swami was very nice. And then he made them even, he didn't, because they are not used to sitting on the floor, so he even had chairs in his interview room. He made them sit on the chairs. And then he materialized the ring for my son-in-law, would-be son-in-law. And then he said, thank you for Swami, because he didn't know what to say. And so that was the day before. And then the wedding was, that was the spectacular event I have watched in my life. And then everything was so beautiful. And the other uniqueness was that Swami sat, they arranged a nice chair with all the flowers, you know, hanging around it. And as soon as Swami came, he told them to remove all those hanging flowers, because he said he wanted others to see Swami, see how compassionate Swami, you know, he wanted them to see him. So he took it out, and he sat there throughout the wedding. He sat there in the chair, and then, and we were also, my husband was sitting next to him before the Swami, before the wedding. And then Swami said, hey, why are you sitting here? You're supposed to be there on the stage, you know, next to your daughter. So then he told him to go up there, and then we sat. And Swami was explaining each step to the boys, because my nephew was there and other boys were sitting. And at that time, just before that, there was a group of youngsters, about 18 of them, I think, students who came from a group of young students came from America to perform play in the summer course. So they had a play, and Al Honig and then the other group of boys, so he from New York. So after the play and everything, Swami said, you can come for, Swami invited them for the wedding. So they were seated next to him. And so since they're all Westerners, Swami was explaining step by step all the, you know, Racha Bandhan, and then putting the tilak and all the spiritual significance of the marriage. And then those boys were all, you know, glued to Swami, because he sat there and explained everything. And then right after the wedding, he went up to the stage and materialized the Mangal Sutra, and then he gave, and then that was a we were able to see that. And
what
then,
about the military band he had promised?
Then her. Next, yeah. Then right after that, then Swami went out, because we had he went out, you know, right when this. Right after Mangal Sutra, you know, how the people all start coming to bless. Then meanwhile, Swami walked out of the marriage hall. And then immediately somebody came and told Swami is calling. Then we went there. To our surprise, there was a military band playing. I mean, this was the most amazing thing, you know. The military band was playing right then, and then we forgot, because this was more than 10 years ago, yeah. Swami told. So it was out of our mind. But Swami, it never forgets.
So
he totally, you know, that was totally surprised for all of us. And then the military band was playing, and then we went, and then of course after the wedding there was a Narayan Seva. There was a feeding of the and Swami, and we have a nice picture. And Swami was serving the gents and the ladies, and then we had also distributed saris. So that was the wonderful event with our daughter's wedding. So by the time my second daughter was ready, you know, he was not doing any weddings.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so compassionate, he found the boy for her. And then he told the boy, no, you go and see the girl and then get married.
He was a matchmaker.
Yeah, matchmaker, yeah, definitely. And then this was another story. And now I'll share about my second son-in-law, okay? And his story is amazing because Swami, like, you know, he's all-knowing. We know that he knows our past, present, and the future. So when he was in the medical school by then, he asked Swami what specialty to do. And Swami said, do surgery. And that was in the last of his list because he never wanted to be a surgeon. He wanted to go in other fields other than the surgery. But once it came out of Swami's mouth, that's it. It's a command. So he agreed. And he applied for surgery and he got surgical residency. And in that residency, as a part of the training, we had to do the research in between. And most of the programs in the United States was 2 years because of the research. And he didn't want to spend another 2 years extra, you know, in between. This is like 6 years program. 2 years extra. So he was looking for some other place, and luckily he found there was one. So when he was doing his surgical residency, in the midst of it, he has to do some research. And before, when he came, a few years ago, Swami said that you'll go to Australia for your training. And he didn't understand, and he kept quiet. So now, when he decided to do this the research, he found 1 year program in New Zealand. So he came to seek Swami's blessings, and he told Swami, I had this program. And Swami said, good, it's a good program, go. So then he, in his mind, he thought, maybe this is what Swami meant, me going to Australia, because New Zealand, Australia are close by. So he thought, you know, Swami meant Australia for New Zealand, you know, our ignorance. You know, he thought like that, and he went and finished 1 year of program, and he came back and continued his surgical residency, and then he finished that, and then he did cardiothoracic specialty. That's because he wanted to be a cardiac surgeon, because Swami told him to be a after surgical training to be a cardiac surgeon and also do subspecialty in to be a pediatric cardiac surgeon. So Swami gave him instructions to do that, and he simply followed it because once he said it. So this time, after the cardiac surgery training is over, then he has to do pediatric residency. And then he found out that the best place, one of the most famous place in the whole world was in Melbourne, Australia, Royal Children's.
Wow.
And there he has to do 1 year of training. And there he was accepted to go for his fellowship. Then it dawned on him when Swami said a few years ago, you'll go to Australia. And he thought...
Yeah, he wasn't confusing New Zealand with Australia.
Yep, Swami,
he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, of course. He always knows, and only it's our ignorance and we assume. So that was that really tells Swami that he knows all our, you know, what's going to happen in the future, the present and the past. So, and then finally they went to Australia, and then he had a good training, and then he came back, and when he was in the New Zealand, when he finished the training, that's the time when he came to see Swami. And he just came, and in between, or before he went back to his training, Swami told, no, go and see this girl, and then Dr. Reddy's daughter, and I want you to marry. So he was, now he said, yes, and now you have to go and see, and he hardly had 2 days' time, because he came, and then they met each other, and then, of course, they got married. And the marriage was done in United States, but there we all felt Swami's presence. And after wedding, we came and Swami performed the wedding in the interview room and blessed them. So that's about my second
son. Such a blessed family.
So, I mentioned one time, Swami, like since we are in Shivaratri time, I had something to say. He called one day before Shivaratri. He saw us in the darshan line, and he told that he'll call you tomorrow for lunch. And then we came home, and then we were all thinking, no, Shivaratri, you know, is traditional. Everybody is like fasting, and they stay up all night, you know, singing bhajan. So they said, no. And they said, well, do you think Swami really will call us? Tomorrow it's fasting day. But we just, you know, when Swami said, you know, we have to call. So luckily, next day he did call us into Ezra Mandir for lunch, and we all had lunch. And like I said, instead of fasting, we had a feast on a Shivaratri day. And this showing, you know, Swami is beyond all these rituals, you know, just, you know, for everything. Like some people, we say that Shivaratri means fasting. So there is no hard and fast.
Feasting with Shiva himself, yeah, Shiva Shakti himself.
And then our good fortune is July 2010. That's another memorable day. And Swami called us. So the whole family he invited. And this time our grandchildren were there. So previous year we did not take our children, only the adults went to for lunch. But this time, and with our grandchildren, we had three of them by then. My granddaughter was not born. So all three of them, and then we were all able to go to Ajun Mandir for lunch. And then,
so tell me, what was it like to dine with God?
Oh yeah, there, you know, because the main thing is they have so many dishes they serve. You know, we don't have time to eat because we want to rather look at Swami. But Swami says, no, eat, you know, because he gives the sign.
So he sits on the head, the captain's chair, head of the table.
And then he makes the lady sit like husband and wife, next to each other, and like that. And so we were all sitting. This time there was no other members, only our family, because the table was full, and our grandchildren were waiting in the other room because they didn't sit. They came only during the dessert time, so he called them, and then he had interaction. But the main thing is they serve so much, and then we had to eat, and then we had to look at Swami, and he's talking, you know, that's like everybody knows that he barely eats, very little food he eats. And then on that day he had like a little pies, little bit he ate, and then, but he looks at every dish, and then he tells them to go and serve to all the guests there, seated there.
So when he was having this dining room conversation, what language did he speak to all of you?
Telugu mostly.
Because all of you speak Telugu.
Telugu, and even the daughters, they understand here and there some English conversation. And then when the grandchildren came, and then we all seated, and then we all sang together for Swami. You know?
What did you sing?
And this is Sai Namame Brahmanandam. Sai Namame Brahmanandam, Sai Charaname Divyanandam, Satya Sai Rupame Nayanandam, Satya Sai Rupame Nayanandam, Leela Vinodame Sai Sankalpamo, Premanandame Sai Samya Rupamo, Premanandame Sai Samya Rupamo.
So all of you sang together, huh? Yeah. Wow, it must have felt so fantastic to sing together. Three generations.
Yeah.
What a special family moment, my God.
We were three generations singing, and everybody so enthusiastically we sang that song. While we were talking, then the second daughter, her son was at that time like 5 years old. So he was next to Swami, and then Swami just grabbed his cheek, and he pulled his cheek, and he said, hey, do you want a sister? Because they had only one child by that, my daughter. So he teased him, do you want a sister? And then innocently, you know, this five-year-old, he says, sure.
Why not? So American.
So he said, sure. And then Swami smiled, and he said, baby sister, Vaidehi. He gave the name
also.
Name Vaidehi. And that was, I mean, and it did happen. And then next year, a year later, she was born in June. And her name, so this time we didn't have to ask Swami name anymore, because before we had to, when the baby is born, we had to come and ask Swami what name, we have to wait. But this time it made it so easy, so we did name her Vaidehi. And even though it's such a traditional name, like all my American friends, they ask, you know, especially when I say I have a granddaughter, they look at the picture when they come to my office. So they say, what's her name? And I say, Vaidehi. And everybody, you know, they repeat it so nicely.
Easy,
because it's Vaidehi.
Sairam, dear listeners, thanks for staying with Morning Glory on Thursday Live on the 7th of August, 2014. The time in Prashanthinilayam right now is 29 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You just heard part 2 of our Tryst with Divinity interview with Dr. Haima Reddy of America. This is a 4-part conversation, and you can catch the remaining 2 parts right here on Morning Glory over the next 2 Thursdays. And in case you have missed part 1, I urge you to catch it at radiosci.org/Tryst. That is T-R-Y-S-T. At this link, radiosci.org/Tryst, you will find our entire repository of Tryst with Divinity interviews, all of which are available for free downloads. On that list, please look out for part 1 of Dr. Haima Reddy's conversation, which you are welcome to download for your inspiration and listening pleasure. Now, just so you know, while it may take a week or so for part 1 to show up on that list, it is already available for download on our Thursday Live archive. Just download last week's episode of Morning Glory, that is the segment dated July the 31st, 2014, and you will find part 1 of this interview available there for a free download. Meanwhile, we are looking forward to your feedback to this episode of Tryst with Divinity, so please email us your comments, feedback and suggestions. Our email ID is listener@radiosci.org. And here is a friendly reminder that you can tune your watches, your hearts and your minds to Prashanthinilayam, India all day long, every Thursday via Thursday Live.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sairam, and welcome back to Morning Glory. Over the last few weeks, I've had the pleasure of playing an engrossing Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories interview for you on Morning Glory. My colleague, Brother Bishop Pushti, has been recording this conversation with Brother Vijay Sai of Bangalore, and if listener feedback is any indication, we realize that you're simply loving it. And when our listeners are happy, we believe our Divine Lord, Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba, is pleased. So without any further ado, dear sisters and brothers, I'm delighted to play for you the next episode of Fleeting Moments with Mr. Vijay Sai of Bangalore. And as I mentioned, he's in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Bishop Rushti. As I leave you to enjoy this interview, I bid you Sai Ram, and I wish you a fantastic, fantastic day ahead from all of us at Team Radio Sai in Prashanthinilayam. Over now to Brother Vijay Sai.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. And today, we continue our fascinating conversation with Mr. B.S. Vijayasai. If you have heard the previous episodes of this series of conversations, we have recorded almost 4 hours with him in 2 sittings. Every time we started the conversation, it was at least for 2 hours. And today, by Bhagwan's grace, he is here with us again. Today is 21st of July 2014, and sir has drove down from Bangalore just to be with us and share, go down the memory lane and pick up some more pearls from his ocean of beautiful and profound moments with Bhagwan. He's someone who's had more than a decade of long and deep association and proximity with Bhagwan. He joined Bhagwan's University in 1987 for his bachelor's in sciences, and then on Bhagwan's instruction and direction, he moved to do his master's in arts, majoring in English, which he completed in 1993. And after that, Swami gave him the opportunity of serving in his university as a faculty member in the Department of English in the Vrindavan campus for 5 years, which he did till 1998. And after this, he moved out into the corporate world and mastered his expertise in the area of human resource development. He gained very valuable experience in this field, and eventually he started his own company called Call Ready Solutions, which is into corporate training in HR, in leadership, conflict management, group dynamics, soft skills and so on. Now, while this goes on in his life, parallelly, sir has also, in his quest to help people, picked up, or rather gained tremendous proficiency in many alternate systems of healing like hypnotherapy, regression therapy, psychotherapy, aura photography, pranic healing, energy healing and so on. And he's had almost 300 days of training in all these disciplines, and he's been conducting workshops and helping so many in individually and in groups, helping people to find more solace and peace and healing and hope in their lives. In fact, he has done his postgraduate diploma in regression therapy in Tasso Institute in Holland. So, he, just like how it was when he was a student, he is a multifaceted personality. At that time, it was oratory and singing and dramatics and so many. And now, it is all this and much more into healing and much more into helping so many people. So with great joy, I welcome you once again, sir, to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you so much, Prasthi, for all.
So last time you were here, you shared some of those light moments that you have had with Bhagwan because of your heavy presence.
Literally heavy presence.
Yeah. But the moments were really so beautiful. And today when you reflect, isn't it? And
yeah.
I remember it is one of those episodes of Fleeting Moments when I laughed so much.
I still have one more thing which I remember for that. The probably it's,
sure, please go on.
That is, so it was again in 1993, and so we were in Bhagwan's room in the night. So it's about 7:48. We were doing Path Seva. And Swami was talking of, Brother Manish Sharma was there, and he was a student at that time, and I was a lecturer there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami was there, we were doing Path Seva, and suddenly we gone to Swami, asked, "So Manish, what is your weight?" Now I said, "Oh my God, it's going to come back to me." And Manish told his weight, and Swami said, "Good, good, good, nice." And Swami said, "You know, I am always 108 pounds, 108, 108, 108.
Right.
So the whole thing started off with my telling Swami, "You're actually looking a little thin, you must eat more," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, "Oh, I'm not going to become fat like you. Eat more, all the time thing only of eating, I'm perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. If I become more, I become less. And what is your weight?"
Mm-hmm.
Then I said, "Oh my, Swami, I'm actually, I'm not checked, Swami." Swami said, "No, 95, more than 95. I said, "Swami, that time, now 95 seems so thin because I'm now about 115 or so. But that time 95 was, oh my God." I said, "Swami, no, Swami." Swami said, "95. I said, "No, I'm much below 90. Swami said, "No, you're above 90. I said, "No, Swami, actually, after you told me I'm taking care, because Swami had told Warden, Swami had told Gopi Saros and Kichar, Swami had told so many people, so don't give him that, don't give him sweet, and don't do that. And in spite of that, I used to somehow manage to still eat." That was mine. This was food. And so finally, as this went on, telling no, Swami, then suddenly Swami said, "Get up, Manish." Manish got up. I was certainly surprised. Swami said, under the cot, he said, "Pull out that."
Oh,
I don't know what it was.
There's
a weighing machine there. And then he said, "You stand." So Manish stood very confidently, and it was very less. And now he said, "Now you stand." Now I said, "Swami." So I actually said, "Swami, actually, I'm fine, Swami." "No, no, you stand. You stand." So I kept one foot and other foot half. And no, fully stand. Then I put both my legs. Then your chin up, you look up. Then, see there, it's showing. 97, and you're lying to me like this. I had not thought that the Lord of the Universe would actually pull out a weighing machine to see that I did told you, you're not dieting, you're not exercising. Okay, you are loading, unloading. So I told Swami, because the way Swami used to behave with this, the distance would just disappear.
Yeah.
So what happens when there's too much respect, the love comes down. When there's too much love, the respect automatically comes down. It's like, you know, you're spending your time with somebody, a close family member.
Yes, yes. And he uses this moment to tell us actually how much he loves us.
Yeah. And how much he cared for me.
Cares for you. Absolutely. I mean, to be, because I remember last time you're talking about the first interaction you had with Bhagwan where he was worried about your pimples.
Correct.
What he was not concerned about.
Correct.
Amazing. And you are someone who had this amazing opportunities of speaking in the divine presence.
Correct.
And I'm sure there will be many such beautiful moments when you reflect on how Bhagwan guided you, how Bhagwan tested you, how Bhagwan trained you, and also perhaps at times chiseled you about this whole act of offering something to him in the form of speech.
Correct. Swami once told me that, even V.K. Gokak, our former vice chancellor, used to practice looking at the mirror.
Hmm.
And he was practiced like that.
Uh-huh. Before he speaks.
So, you must practice how will my movement be, how much should I smile. V.K. Gokak himself is the Professor V.K. Gokak. And you think you're something, this one, you have to practice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, and I told many times, I used to say, Swami, speak through me. Then Swami used to tell me, if I speak through you, then why should you speak? Swami said, no, you got to get ready.
Yes.
You got to get ready and only then you can say, speak through me.
You have to do your job. You
have,
homework.
To do your homework.
Yes.
Don't take it lightly coming there on the stage and telling Swami, speak through me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he told me this, he told me, so the way you dress and the way you apply powder or whatever, you've got to be very careful. The way you keep your handkerchief, you've got to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sweat a lot.
Mm.
And Swami used to see that I use the handkerchief in a particular way. And he said you have to keep it this way and you have to keep it very nicely folded and don't open it completely while on the stage. Just see how Swami's handkerchief is. Do you see the handkerchief ever becoming dirty? No. But I would have used it. In the same way, you've got to remove it from your pocket, wipe your face and keep
do
it
very
there.
Gracefully.
Do it gracefully.
Hmm.
I used to be a little clumsy in most of the things. So Swami used to say, please do it gracefully. And I too used to be more concerned when I do it in public.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
Because it was like a home when we used to do inside Trai.
Yeah.
But when it was in the Sai Ramesh Hall or even in the Kalyan Mandapam or even in when it was Puran Chandra or the Hindu Stadium, Swami used to be very, very careful that this is the way we present ourselves there. And so Swami used to call me Subbalakshmi. He had told me, see, I want you to sing a shloka before you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I also want you to see that you appropriately quote the relevant stanzas from various poets, be it Purandardasa, be it Kanakadasa, be it Kabir. And Swami said, you got to have common sense.
Mm.
So I was once ready with Telugu couplets. And it was, we had our president who had come to Sri Shankar Sharma had come. And Swami told, say, don't get ready with Telugu. He is a person who loves Hindi, Kabir. So quote from Kabir. So I got ready with Kabir. And after some time, Anjali Devi and Srimati P. Sushila Amma had come. Swami said, no, now you have to quote Telugu. And somebody else from Karnataka had come out to quote Kannada. Swami said, you have to use your common sense and understand who's there and only then do it.
Yes.
Because you are representing this. And Swami told me so many times Swami told me, this is your seva.
Uh-huh.
And this because I was probably, as a HR manager, realized I was useless in every other sense. When I tried to serve, I had spilt it. When I had done something else, so finally Swami thought, okay, the only thing he's capable of doing is speaking and probably singing. And so Swami gave me that particular opportunity. Because after all, what are all these? The moment we join the college, what is the first thought that we get? In what way do we get close to Swami?
Yes.
So first thing is, can I join the Vedam group?
Yes.
Can I join the band? or can we join the bhajan group, the Sai Symphony? And those are our dreams. The reason being very simple, we want to get physical proximity of Swami.
Yes.
Including the sports meet, you want to be an escort boy, everything because of that. So I tried being in the Vedam group for a while, because I heard for all the Vedam group boys, Swami would give those his dhoti. And then I tried getting into bhajan. They said, you can't be in both simultaneously because you have to either choose this or that. So then I got into bhajan and tried getting into band and said, you can't do both simultaneously, choose one of them. So then I finally got into bhajan alone. But Swami used to call me for speaking about all of this. So there have been so many instances like this. So in the end of our first year, that was in the year 1987-88, Swami had called me once or twice, Sibha Lakshmi, come get up and sing. So the next year when we came here for Dasara, Swami sent word through Sri Chiranjeevi Rao telling, go and call Sibha Lakshmi. He called three other boys and told, go and call Sibha Lakshmi. So, Chiranjeevi Rao Garu, he went along the lady's side and asked, where is Sibha Lakshmi? Where is he? Said, Sibha Lakshmi from Bangalore, Sibha Lakshmi from Bangalore. So then he came back and said, Swami, Sibha Lakshmi is not there from Bangalore. I just checked in the lady's side. Then, lady side kadu, gent side, boys. Then he said, Swami, boys. So then he did not understand. Then he came to our warden sir, Sri Narasimhamurthy. Then warden sir called a couple of people and said, who did Swami call Sibha Lakshmi? So he said, he had used that name for me once, sir. So I said, okay, you just go, let us see. So I went there and then saw, this guy is Sibha Lakshmi, this guy is Sibha Lakshmi. And see, he went and searched at the lady's side for you. That particular incident, that particular interview, it was such a chance. Swami said, okay, you have to speak for Dasara. Okay, you speak after 5 days, you speak after four of us there, brothers there. And Swami gave us pen and paper and said, start preparing your speech. For the first time, we were watching Swami so closely. Swami's humming and opening the letters and sitting there. And the moment we look at him, he says, hey, get ready. Get ready. So we used to write and look at Swami. We used to write the speech and look at Swami. After 15-20 minutes, he said, okay, give me the papers. So one after, what did you write? What are you going to speak? Okay, this and this and this. Okay. And then whatever the chinna katha was there, he elaborated on that, which one boy had written. Then he told something else to me. So you got to sing this song and then you sing this. So it was not for preparation of speech. It was just to give us a chance.
Yes.
Of his physical proximity.
Absolutely.
And this happened in the Purnachandra Hall, behind the backstage. Those days it was a VIP place.
Yes.
And that's the place where we used to do this, backstage. And then that particular occasion, I still remember, it's in my memory, because it was the first time I got so close to Swami. Then Swami said, see, there are so many devotees waiting. Yagnam is going on there. I want to go give darshan and come. I'll go. Swami, you all said, prayed. Swami, no, Swami, please, Swami, sit here for some more time. Swami, please, Swami, be with us. Swami said, you know, when you all say, be with me, I can't go. I'm bound. And we looked at Swami in a quizzical way, and Swami said, that's because you don't know what you were. You don't know what you have done. You don't know all the prapti that you have. So if you say, don't go, I'm bound here, I have to be here. Okay, I'll be here for some more time. He sat with us and for about 15-20 minutes, then asked each of us about where are you from and the usual questions just to build familiarity. And then finally Swami said, now I'll go for darshan and come. Let's go quickly, I'll come back. It was almost as if he was asking us for permission.
Oh my.
I said, oh my God, Swami. You know, and then Swami said, I want you to understand how devotees are. Because otherwise you'll become frogs and near the lotus where you're sitting so close physically, but you may not be able to take the nectar. So you would not be able to realize the value of this particular proximity I've given you. So just come and peep from the backstage and see how devotees are and how they're going to fall over each other. Just have one glimpse of mine. You just watch. And then two of us flanked this side, two of us flanked that side. Backstage when we opened the curtain, we were watching, and the moment Swami went, oh my God, people clapped, and it was such a frenzy, and it's weird, because I was there in the crowd once upon a time as a devotee.
Yes.
And I knew it was a good fortune. Then Swami went around, and then came back and said, Chusyara, did you see? Didn't you see how devotees are? They're all like bees. They're coming from far off to take the divine nectar. And here I am spending time with you all the time. So realize the value. Never forget my divinity. I might be with you, like you, guide you. And it's just to give you chances. It's not that you're going to speak of, you're very good. It's just to give you chances.
Absolutely.
And realize this, is what Swami said. So even a couple of times when I used to tell this particular line, there's a song called Sharadeva. I used to quote this from in my speeches. The song went like, Tande Tahiya Punyavo Na Endo Madida Pujayo. I do not know whether it's the Punya, that it is my Punya of my parents, or the Puja, or some Punya, which I have done ages back in Mendel, I do not know. Mm-hmm. But all I know is today I'm in your, at your lotus feet.
Wow. So many moments of revelation, isn't it?
Yeah, really. And about speeches itself, I can go on telling you the kind of things that happened. So once I completely got ready with my speech, I don't know whether I mentioned this to you before, I completely got ready with my speech and I wrote down points. So Swami is very particular. You cannot keep a chit in front of you and read out. You got to speak out naturally.
Yes.
But because I had to speak almost every day, I had to get ready with the sloka and the points as a flow chart I had kept in front of me.
Mm.
So I kept the chit. And the previous day, Swami had seen me keeping the chit. He just looked it from the corner of his eye. And he had warned generally everyone, see, when I ask boys to get up and speak, I don't expect you to carry chits. You must speak automatically. Swami had mentioned that. But the next day, I was again supposed to speak. So I had got ready with my points and I put it in my shirt pocket. It was Kalyan Mandapam and Swami said, take Namaskar. And before speaking, I went and took Namaskar. And I went onto the stage to speak there and took the podium. And I started off my slow car on automatic pilot. And I slowly then put my hand into my pocket to see. There was no chit there. I put my hand, the battery was no chit there. Then oh look around, Swami is having the chit in his hand. He had pickpocketed me.
Oh my God. When you did Namaskar.
I did Namaskar.
Wow.
And then very, very mischievously looked at me and the chit in his hand and looked at me like that. Then I and kept it there and kept the clove box on it. Then I realized, okay, sealed. So I said, okay, so Swami is giving me the message that I must speak and I spoke.
Yeah.
Then I realized it was just a prop to feel confident.
Yeah.
But by doing that, Swami actually helped me gain confidence.
Yes. Yeah, because he made you feel that you can happily do without it.
I can do without it.
Yes. And in such situations, actually, you speak more from the heart.
Yeah.
So you are totally dependent on the flow, whatever comes.
Correct.
and in those moments, you really feel guided.
Correct.
So it must have been an occasion when... next time when you have to do a thing like that, you have tremendous confidence.
Correct.
Because you know that once he takes over, things are going to fall into place.
Really. So even about when there were a couple of occasions where in the Purnachandra, Dasara 93, where I broke down on the stage and Swami wiped my tears using his handkerchief and gave me a glass of water to drink from his own glass. And it was, I said, no, Swami, I said, drink.
And his own glass.
His own glass. And that's the kind
moving.
Of love he had
very
moving for all of us.
I mean, things you cannot even imagine have happened.
Correct.
Today when you think of it, it's so overwhelming.
It's so overwhelming. And I wonder, how did I have the gumption to do all those things? When I talk of this, I remember one particular thing. That was in 93 and Swami had come to Vrindavan and Swami had, with his blessings, we and another brother, Manishama, we were inside with Swami and Swami was very upset with the rest of the boys.
Mm-hmm.
She was not allowing them into Trai Vrindavan.
Oh, for the Trai sessions?
For Trai sessions.
Oh my God.
So in the evening, immediately after the Sai Ramesh Hall, only we used to go inside and nobody would come. So into the Trai sessions.
It's a big loss for the students.
It's a big loss for the students. And Vrindavan is about Trai sessions.
Yeah, I mean without Trai sessions, the charm of Vrindavan is lost.
At the same time, he used to ask, he used to inquire, who asked you what?
Oh.
What happened?
You want to
what
know
are the boys saying?
What are the boys saying?
And in spite of all that, he was not allowed. Now what happened is, we once prayed to Swami, please Swami. Swami said, I'm giving you a chance. So what, please? Why are you praying on others' behalf? I'm giving you a chance. You're here sitting right at my feet and doing Pad Seva. pray for your behalf. Don't do recommendation.
Oh.
So I said, okay, I should not do recommendation. So finally I got an occasion where Bhagwan one day said, instructed me, see, tomorrow you got to get onto the stage and tell the boys very firmly that they got to be disciplined. And it is not acceptable. How Sai students should behave. Students should not behave like stupids. Oh. They should behave like students. And they should be disciplined. And that's why Bhagwan does not tolerate this. And just try sessions, not Swami is inside them. They should realize Swami is inside them. And let them not run and come and all. So this is good enough kind of a thing. And Bhaga Chappu, Gatti Ga Chappu, Swami had.
Tell strongly.
And tell them that they should be. And the devotion is important. And you're going to tell them very firmly that they've got to be devoted to Swami and be disciplined and let them be content with what I've given them. The very chance I've been in Vrindavan and given them darshan itself is good enough. And that particular day, I thought, okay, I can do this, but this is an occasion for me to see if the boys also will get a chance because I was a lecturer at that time.
I know.
So and the boys will feel, sir, anyway has his own time, great time with Swami.
And I'm representing Swami and then telling them.
And then you're standing on the stage and you have to tell them, everybody, that forget, you know, devotion, you don't have to come near
Swami. And bhakti also is enough kind of a feeling. So what I did is, I actually did some double crossing. I knew Bhagwan's instruction, I always follow Bhagwan's instruction, but you always take chances with your mother, because you know mother's mood also, because I had seen Swami actually asking about many of them. So I went back, and that morning after Suprabhatam...
Many times when we think that Swami is not calling us, we are missing Swami. The fact of the matter is, He's missing us more.
He's missing us more.
You must have really seen that, right?
Really seen that. Swami used to ask, how's this boy? What's happening? Who's asking about me and everything? So that particular day, so went back to the dining hall. We had the Suprabhatam, and had taken permission from Warden Sir. So I got up and... we practiced songs. We practiced Hankutam Se Pyar Kitana. We practiced Tu Pyar Ka Sagar Hai. We practiced Oma. And there were a couple of songs like this, which said, every moment of my life, please be with me. We got ready with all these songs, three or four very beautiful songs. And Tumi Mere Manzil, Tumi Mere Puja, all those songs. And I told the boys, see, today, this evening, I'll be speaking. So whenever I signal you, it's a chance for you, last chance for you. Whenever I signal you, it'll be nice if you all could get up and surround Swami and pray. Then Swami would probably relent to our prayers. Although Swami has actually decided to be very firm about this. And so whenever I signal you, you must start off with Oma. And really do it from the bottom of your heart. Otherwise, you all are going to miss all these chances. Because I have a student... experience the lovely chances with Swami in Sai Vrindavan, which all of you are missing. And every day missed is 3 hours of session with Bhagwan. It's going to be very difficult for you to get it back later on. So they agreed. And that evening when he came to the Sai Ramesh hall, so Swami looked at me and asked, ready? I said, yes. As I took namaskar, Swami said, ha, gattiga chappu, bhaga chappu, okay, be firm. And tell, oh, this one, discipline, tell your ability, right? I said, Swami, yes, Swami. So I exactly first conveyed Swami's message. And after conveying Swami's message, you know, I used to always use those poems given by Bhagwan to Professor Kasturi on New Year's Day, which is there published in Loving God.
Yes, yes.
I used to use that as bargaining chip many times. So in that, I said, yes, Swami, we are all bad. And till then, it was according to the script that Swami had given me. Then I said, and Swami has told Professor Kasturi, if you pray like this, blessings and boons will follow. So Swami, here I'm praying on behalf of all the boys. Will you, my Lord, let go the hold? You will not, however bad we be. Will you, my Lord, let me escape your eye? You will not, however wanton I be. And there are 4 stanzas to this. Swami started looking that, because this is not supposed to be the script, because I was supposed to be. And suddenly I said, I know, Swami, because I firmly believe you are ever beside that. I firmly believe that last stanza, there's one more poem called I Firmly Believe. The last stanza is, I firmly believe you can never say no whatever I ask from you. And tell me, Lord, is this not the reason why we are asking that we want to come inside for Thrahi session.
Oh my God.
I looked at the boys. Swami looked at me totally with a shock in his eyes.
What is this guy doing?
What's happening? The script has changed. And immediately the odd boys are telling me, please Swami, silly Swami. Swami looked at me, half smiling, at that. He said, hey. Donga, he said, means chor. You're into double cross. I said, Swami, devotion to chase them, Swami, please forgive me. And boys are telling me, please, Swami. And I signaled and they started off, oh, ma, tu kitni achi hai. And they started crying. And to me, mere mandir, they started crying. And then I went and took namaskar and Swami said, I told you to do something, and you did something else. I said, Swami, everything I did with bhakti only, Swami, with only love, Swami, please forgive me if I overstepped my boundary. Adhika prasang chestunnam, I said. You overstepped your boundaries. So, Swami, it's out of devotion. I saw boys crying. Swami, I just thought I should tell you, Swami, because it's a collective prayer.
It was a risk. But somehow you felt that it is out of sincere love for him, so it should be.
I thought so, but I was still not sure.
Never
because
know.
Swami was still trying to close his eyes and be very firm. But after Oma and after a couple of bhajan, tu pyar ka sagar hai. You know, Swami has often said that my heart is like butter. You just require a little warmth in your prayer to melt it. Yes. That's all you require. And that boy singing from the bottom of the heart completely melted Swami's heart.
Wow.
I had not realized this because Swami looked very upset. As he went backstage, and a couple of people said, Vijay, what did you do? I said, no, I know I've taken a risk. I don't know. Then Sri Narasimurthy Garu, the warden, went inside, Thrahi Vrindavan, and we were all waiting, totally scared. We did not know what's going to happen. And I knew, and my roommate, Manish, said, what did you do, man? He asked you to do something else, and you did something else. Because he was there when the instructions were given. Yes. I said, it's my risk. I know. There's the only thing I could do. Let us see. But after 5-10 minutes, Narasimurthy Garu came running and said, see, all of you can't run. In a lines of three, very quietly can go inside Thrahi. You know, people were full of exhilaration. There was so much of cheer. And this quickly got, and we had, and all the teachers ran in the front and very quietly they went and stood there. They had sat a distance away from the chair.
Just to be careful.
Distance away from the chair. That's where we had made them sit. And then Swami didn't come for a long time.
Oh.
And then very slowly he came and then said, you think I'm angry with you? No, I'm not angry with you. You got to learn, no? And you got to, it's like a workshop. And he made V.K. Narasimhan speak. He made many other people speak. And it looked as if there was nothing wrong till that day. The way Swami makes it look in that day is
correct.
That people forgot the misery of the last 12 to 15 days when Swami had not called us inside at all. And it just became a normal session, and thereafter, we should just come and run. And Swami was used to get upset because he used to be afraid that people would fall if we run. And he used to say, no, be slow, go slowly, don't hurt yourself. There are marble steps. And because, you know, everyone has to sit as close as possible to Swami.
Amazing. I mean, two, three thoughts come to my mind as you narrated this. One is that once when boys were running like this to Thrahi, and there was this senior devotee who said, Swami, this is indiscipline.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware of this.
I'm aware of that, yeah.
Yeah, then you should narrate it.
They tell me, but I'm not exactly.
No, and then Swami, on that occasion, was with the boys, and where Swami said that, you tell me, in which university will you find boys running after God in such a crazy manner? Tell me one university where boys are so mad after God, undergraduate, postgraduate boys running after God.
Really? No, I think we were all crazy. Because I remember how crazy we were and how Swami tolerated it. We used to run, even in Bajrata Prashant Nilayam or Vrindavan when we were students, we used to run beside the car, run till the Hilu Stadium, keep running. I don't know how we used to run. Barefoot we used to run. Now we can't even walk barefoot. And we used to, and it once so happened in Prashant Nilayam. Those days, Swami would all be seated behind. Swami would come out of the entry room. And just before bhajans, he would just signal. And all of us would go and pour and sit near the, till the VIP veranda there, facing the chair. Mm-hmm. That is a common practice. So everyone would keep waiting for Swami to signal. This is in my first degree.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular day I ran. When Swami signaled, I actually wanted to be in the front. I ran and I lost my balance.
Oh.
People had pushed me and I was also in a mad, crazy way running.
Mm-hmm.
I went and directly hit Swami.
Oh my God.
My head hit Swami's head. And there was a big sound, thuck, there's a sound. And I said, oh my God. And Swami just looked at me and looked at all of us and just walked into the room and the door closed. And I banged into Swami. And all the boys and all the elders, the teachers came and said, don't you have sense? You hurt Swami. And we could hear the sound from here and the way you went and dashed Swami. Don't you have common sense and to run this way? And I thought that would be my last, because now Swami is going to come out. And when Swami came out, I was about to say, I'm sorry. But Swami came out and looked at me and said, how's your head? I said, Swami, I'm very sorry, Swami. No, not like that. See, I have cushion. Nothing will happen. Oh, you don't have cushion.
Oh,
so it's pain for me. Is it fine? Bagunda? Fine, okay. Be careful next time.
Oh, my God.
And that was the love of Swami.
Oh.
Even on another occasion, when we talk of running, I used to, back in Vrindavan, my second semester onwards, I used to buy chappals and keep them ready for Swami. Because
mm-hmm.
I didn't know when someone would need to use them. Mm-hmm. So I would always have them ready with me. Suddenly, sometimes from the Sairam shed, Swami used to walk to the hostel.
Mm-hmm.
So that time I used to give the chappals to Swami. And many other times, suddenly Swami used to come onto the lawns and go somewhere. So before they bring the chappal from inside, I used to give these chappals.
Oh.
So each time I used to have a new pair of chappals which I could take as blessings from Swami.
Wow.
And Swami used to say that. And we used to also run. So it was when Swami used to go and supervise for summer course in the auditorium, college auditorium. So all of us completely ran and we, three of us were mad actually. It was three of my class, back two juniors and me, Anand, Shyam and myself, and we used to run like crazy. And it was a question of who will open Swami's door
mm-hmm.
and who will close Swami's door. It was out of love, but there should have been some disciplined love. You know, it became after some time an untamed, became nature without nurture. Okay. So what happened? I remember this incident very clearly. So all of us, I think it was one of us who closed the door after Swami sat inside, and only in the evening we came to know that Swami's toe had actually got trapped in the thing in our eagerness to close the door. But what Swami had done was, he just kept quiet till the car went out, and it was only outside that he opened and closed the door. And he said, I've done this because if anyone comes to know that my toe was stuck, what would happen to the boy? They will completely pounce on him and say, and that's the reason I just kept like this. I know it pained. And when this particular thing, when I remember, in a couple of occasions happened this way, with many, many students. When I, that, apna nahi tujhe sukh dukh koi, main muskaya tu muskai, main roya tu roi. That particular thing from Oma comes into my mind.
Absolutely.
That is, you don't have any joy or sorrow of your own. When I smile, you smile. When I cry, you cry. And that's the kind of thing that Swami had for all of us. You see, imagine, all of us, if any of us have a little bit of pain also, he did not even grimace.
Yes.
He completely kept the stoic appearance, went on blessing people till he went outside the college gate, and only then did he do it.
Because you had thought, if anyone comes to know that this boy is responsible for this, he knows what hell this boy will go through. He is willing to go through that hell.
He is willing to go through it for the sake of the boys.
Wow. Amazing. In fact, when you mentioned the other incident, what also occurred to me is many times when Swami doesn't speak for 1 month, 2 months or 6 months also, then suddenly one day he'll speak, and when he speaks, it almost seems as if nothing's happened.
As if nothing's wrong.
Yeah. There's something so amazingly he does that.
Really?
There won't even be a chance for you to ask forgiveness, as if, why?
There's nothing wrong with that kind of feeling, yeah.
But I think what would have happened is what you would have gone through in those 1 month, yes. 2 months, 6 months, that is what you would have wanted. That he would have put you through so much of internal churning.
Yeah, internal churning would have gone through.
Yeah. And I think that is something that every devotee goes through.
Yeah.
So you must have had so many more instances of such occasions when Bhagwan churned you.
Bhagwan churning was a regular affair for me. So many people used to call me shock absorber.
Literally and figuratively.
Literally shock absorber. And probably I miss it now. That those days I used to wonder, why you don't have any work morning, afternoon, evening. Every time you're trying to catch only me. And it happened usually when, especially when it comes to bhajans. And so there are occasions when he was upset. There are occasions when he was happy. And even the worst performance, he would say, you sang very well and it was so nice. And on other occasions, people used to sing well. And I used to sing well and Swami used to get upset.
Oh.
On one occasion when Swami was upset with me and I started singing Kasturi Tilakam Narayanam in Vrindavan, he sent word through Sri R. Padmanabhan, the former who used to go with Swami.
Yeah.
He came running, he said, Swami is telling, this is not a classical kacheri.
Oh, okay.
It's a bhajan session. So I immediately had to change the song to something else. And there were many occasions when other bhajan boys went, they did not actually go out of raga or talam, they were good. But Swami said they were gone out of raga, they were gone out of talam. And then he used to come and back and try Vrindavan and say, Yatha Raja Tatha Praja.
Oh. Which means,
as the king, so the subjects. Because I was in charge of the bhajan crew. And so he used to get very angry with all that. And there were many such occasions where he used to get... And the boys, who was AVC boys who take care of mics, they were actually very happy, including the teachers. They say, Vijay, you must start singing. Because the moment you sing, even if Swami wants to come out for darshan, he won't come out. He'll wait behind till your song finishes and only then he would come.
Wait, they have more time with Swami.
They have more time. So it went on like this for quite some time. And on one occasion, there's so many such occasions actually. Interest in Bharti, I think it was my first MA when I was, and Swami for some apparent reason was very upset with me. And he stopped talking to me. So whenever I used to sing bhajans, he should stop putting talam.
Oh.
He'll close his eyes.
So difficult to sing when you get no response from
Swami. And he'll sometimes stop the bhajan after first speed.
Oh.
Even if the bhajan is good. Or he'll purposely, when the mic comes to me, he'll push the stool and get up, even if it is the sixth bhajan or... Because we sing at least 8 bhajans those times.
Yes.
And for a long time, he stopped actually even looking at me, stopped smiling at me, stopped coming anywhere near me. And from a distance, he used to note where you are, and the entire zone is completely avoided. It becomes a no man's zone. So I used to, and finally, I had enough of it one day and we take this liberty with Swami. And I told you, I don't know how actually we did it those days. If we look back at it, we don't know whether it was pure bhakti or foolishness, but we did it. So I told my cousin that, see, Swami is not, he is studying here. I told him, see, my Swami is not doing so. I'm not coming for darshan today. Because I'm also angry. If he doesn't want to see me, I'm also not going to see him.
Oh.
So I sent a registered post and said,
oh my God.
And that day only, Swami went to him and asked, where is your brother?
Oh.
Where is Swami? Is there something? Swami went and asked him, where is he? And he sent word everywhere. Where is he? Look for him. And then I was coming towards for bhajan. I thought I'd go and sit behind. And then after some time, I don't come for darshan. I was walking towards the mandir and somebody came running and said, Swami is looking for you. And I ran in and... Where were you? He actually made it look as if there's nothing wrong with it at all. On the other occasion, I had told my cousin that, see, today, something sure is going to happen. I have to make Bhagwan laugh. I have to make him respond. He's not responding. Let there be a positive response or a negative response, a positive stroke or a negative stroke. So a zero stroke where he just closes his eyes and sits without any response is not acceptable. Okay? And it used to be like that for quite a few days. So, and that particular day, Swami was wearing a yellowish kind of a pitambara kind of a robe. He was looking very beautiful.
Mm.
It had rained that day and fluffy hair, was looking very beautiful. And I took the mic, and the moment the mic came to me, Swami closed his eyes, became absolutely stiff. I had actually, in two madhyam, I told him, keep the Shruti. I didn't even tell them which bhajan. Because I know if I tell the bhajan, Shailesh will say, no, change the bhajan. I didn't even tell the bhajan. And he kept two madhyam, minor, and I started off with a lilting voice, purposely to embarrass him. Mana bangarupati baba. And everyone followed the line. And immediately Swami opened his eyes and, Norboi! He said, shut up! Oh my God, they were so embarrassed. I had already planned. I knew something was going to happen. So the same Shruti, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. Swami was serious for a while. For about 10 seconds he was serious. Then he burst out. He burst out laughing. He laughed and laughed and laughed.
Oh my God.
S. Kumar sir sit in the extreme corner, on the left-hand corner towards the lady's side. So there Swami looked at him and told, ah, his screw has fallen. This fellow's mad. And I said, it's there. I made a response. That's all I wanted. So, although he acts angry, deep inside he only loves us.
Yes, absolutely. When you think of it, I mean, he's just reflection, reaction, resound, as Bhagwan said, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, the same thing someone else, if he would have done, probably would not have got the same response.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many occasions we have seen, like,
correct,
right?
Correct.
Like, the same thing one person does, then he gets a particular response, and another person does, then he gets a completely different response.
Correct. You can't predict Swami at all.
It's all because of that individual's relationship with
the relationship, and also, whatever you think of Swami, Swami has said again and again of Annamacharya Kriti, which he loves again and again, which he quotes, Enta Matramuna Evaru Talachina Anta Matrame Nivu. How much ever, whatever people think of you, you only become that.
That.
You exactly respond to the thoughts and feelings of the devotees.
If you think Swami knows, he knows. If you think he doesn't know, he doesn't
know. He doesn't know. It's almost like, you know, the quantum physics says that light and it's particle as well as energy.
Yeah.
If you look at it from the perception of a wave, it will become a wave perception. And that's what Bhagwan does. Exactly.
Oh my God. If you think he's human, he's human.
Yeah.
If you think he's divine, he's divine.
Yes. And you know, so Swami has told this. When we asked him this, Swami, so I need an experience to believe, somebody had said.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, no. Belief comes first, experience comes next. Yes. You don't say, I need experience and then I'll get belief. If you believe, you will experience.
Yes. You can't say that I will start swimming and then go into water.
Correct. And also about faith. When there were a couple of occasions where I've seen people going into the interview room on a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And on one occasion when I was there, where Swami told him, get up, and patted on his knees, and he actually walked out, and he had forgotten that he had actually brought crutches into the room, because Swami completely made him forget it.
Amazing.
And when people clapped, only then did he realize, and all of us had seen that this had happened. But so for Swami, it's just passage, he would not even be so much enamored by these miraculous happenings the way he used to do it.
Amazing. That's what on one occasion when something like this miraculous happened, and Bhagwan apparently said that meeku aashcharyam naaku sahajam.
Ha, meeku aashcharyam. It is a surprise for you, but for me it is natural.
For me it is natural. And you must have seen so many of such instances, right?
When yes, so many such instances.
So amazed with what?
It's amazed. Yeah. I've really been amazed at the way Bhagwan suddenly reveals his divinity.
Yes. Or those instances in Kodaikanal, when suddenly he'll bring out something out of the blue, you're amazed.
Yeah, yeah. Swami in Kodaikanal has shown us things that belong to Mahabharata era, that belong to Ramayana, that belong to Draupadi, that belong to, he's to those huge rings.
Mm.
And he said, because in those days it was Ajanubahum, people were well built.
Yes.
And that's why even in the Shiragam Ajanubahum comes. So he's shown us all those things.
And talking about Ramayana, Mahabharata, in many of our convocation dramas and other dramas, we have had occasions when we have enacted the scenes from all these epics. And you are someone who was so much part of these dramas. And we have had dramas of the lives of saints. We have had dramas from the scenes of Ramayana, Mahabharata. So what scenes come to your mind now when you think about the times that you have had with Bhagwan in terms of offering your talent in the various such extracurricular activities?
The first time when I got into a drama was in my third year degree, 1990, where the Vrindavan campus decided to do a drama on Bhakta Jayadeva for the first time, and for the sports meet.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, okay, you can choose Vijay Sai as Jayadeva.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Ravi Kumar also in the drama, and quite a few others in the drama. And our warden, sir, Sri Narasimurthy Garu, had written the script, and we'd all got ready with the thing. And Swami said, Bala, practice chase Ravala. You would practice very well and come. And we had practiced and come. And when I was in Vrindavan, Swami came once in the dream and said, you're not practicing enough.
Oh.
Practice more. And I practiced more. Then when I came back here, in the interview, he said, that day I told you, no, practice more. So he correlated what he had told me in the dream also when
wow.
I came back here. Then he asked me to sing. So I started singing the Radhika, Krishna Radhika, and the other one, Dheera Samire, Munati Re, and all these songs. Now, Swami is very particular about the way you sing those swaras and the nuance of the song. So he used to give me a particular nuance, that is, that Tavavirahi Keshava. I should not get the song, because you have to sing it this way itself. And I did not understand. So what Swami did was, Ravi Kumar is a better singer. So he made Ravi Kumar learn it, and said, you teach him then.
Oh.
So we used to take tape records and everything would record. Swami said, no, you would let him learn and then teach you. And then, there were so many such nuances in this song. Then there's one more, Natha Hare, Jagannath Hare, some of Pisusha, which I picked up. All Jayadeva Ashtapadis. And this song, so it was there on the day of Shankar, on the evening of the sports meet. Thursday, we did not have an evening program. It was 11th evening we had this, 12th evening we had this. So Swami came for the rehearsal the previous day also. And what happened was, he called us for about 8 to 10 interviews within that time. I told you it was more of spending time with the Lord.
Yes.
And each interview was for about 45 minutes to 1 hour.
Wow.
And he used to talk about the bhakti of Jayadeva, the bhakti of Radha, how he wrote about this and how he wrote about that, and also ask, teach me the nuances. But the thing was, each day he used to add on or change the previous one. It was so dynamic. And here I was, a novice, trying to pick up the whole thing. So, on the rehearsal day as well as the final day, the biggest thing for me was not to please the audience, to please Swami.
Yes.
So after every turning that he taught me, I should look at him. And Swami would say, okay, correct.
Oh my God.
After every... But you know, and Swami is sitting right in front of you.
Yes.
God, Saraswati is sitting right in front of you, mm. and you have to sing.
Mm.
And a couple of times I did not even sing those things that he told me out of nervousness. And when the cross, Swami used to signal, oh, you missed it kind of thing.
Oh my God.
For 1 hour drama. Then in that particular drama, there was a particular dialogue where... My sweet Lord, we had this Rishi Seth who was playing the thing of you go, and this boy had come with Jayadeva to go to Vrindavan, and suddenly he asked this boy, what are you doing there? Come out. And he disappears, and only he is there with the Lord. So it was he who had taken Jayadeva when he was not...
The Lord had taken
as a cowherd.
Mm-hmm.
So on the final day, now what's supposed to, I have to look at the stage where the Jagannath temple is and look and say, hey, why are you standing there in Amalkishore? Come out. It's a sanctum of the Lord. And then I have to look back, and then he used to have disappeared into it actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now he forgot.
He forgot to what?
To disappear.
Oh my God.
So I was supposed to turn to the audience, tell a dialogue and turn back, and he was have disappeared. He was supposed to have disappeared.
Okay.
I turn back. You're still there, Navalkishore, I said. Everyone, the people who knew it, burst into laughter. And then Navalkishore realized. Then I turned this, I said, but Swami also looked at me like that. And then he disappeared. And after all this, the entire drama was, my sweet lord, my sweet lord, my sweet lord. So on the day of the drama in the evening, one day on the rehearsal, I finished it and came down to Swami. Then Swami asked them to bring a box which I brought in the car.
Mm-hmm.
He opened the box. He said, see, your sweet lord is giving you sweets. And gave me the sweet and told you, distribute it to everyone. And on the day of the drama, he had told us before itself that he had long hair. He had that, he had this. So he came to check the costume backstage.
Wow.
Check the makeup backstage and said, no, you've got to do like this. Okay, it's fine. Then he did one thing. He said, is the dhoti tight? I said, Swami, it's tight. Wait, he pulled it and, tight. Don't go on the stage and it did not fall there. Such, Swami used to take care of minor things.
Amazing.